The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten, as it always is, by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them? They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we're going to return for the last time ever to the October 2018 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. It doesn't actually say magazine on the front. I just added that. I think it used to. I'm not sure. And above the words Our State, it says The Mountain Issue. And below it says Into the Wild, Where to Find Your Mountain Magic. I don't know if this is exactly a mountain article or not, but it certainly is something that takes place in the woods, and I see the word Blue Ridge Counties here, so must be pretty mountainous where this man is standing holding a white plastic bag and a rake and a shovel. And on the right-hand side of the page, and yes, I know I haven't read the title yet, but the right-hand side, we see a lot of mason jars, or jars similar to mason jars. I don't know that they are mason jars, but they're that style. There's clear liquid in each one, and a golden thing or two in each one of them. It kind of looks like some underwater creature, like a... it could be a shrimp, but I was thinking of a squid or something like that with all these tentacles. And then you look closer and say, no, those aren't tentacles. Well, the hint is the title of the article, The Everything Root, a cure-all to many. Wild ginseng is still hunted and sold in Blue Ridge Counties. Protecting it takes vigilance, know-how, and sometimes even a stakeout. Written by Lee Ann Henyon. Rob Newman has two guns behind him, a taser in his pocket, and his eyes on a silver truck. He's noticed something curious, a toolbox with a lock casually hanging open. What does he think he's going to put in there later that might be worth something, Newman says, calling the truck's tag into dispatch. When he became a ranger, Newman vowed to uphold the National Park Service mission to protect the parklands, leaving them in good shape for future generations. And on the Blue Ridge Parkway, there's one living resource that needs more advocacy than others, ginseng. For most people, parkway locals evoke, or I guess it's locales, actually, evoke memories of family outings. For Newman, they trigger ginseng enforcement flashbacks. There's the rhododendron stand where he spent 6 hours on a stakeout, a trail he traced to a biological crime site. The overlook where he caught a couple stuffing poached ginseng roots under a car seat. He scours the roadside as he drives, his gaze rolling over grassy knolls and into forest understory. I'm not good at spotting the plant, he says, but I'm good at spotting the people who are after it. In the forest, everything craves ginseng. Turkeys scratch at the seeds. Deer graze the leaves and berries. Voles burrow into the soil to chew its root. In China, human hankering for the root and a rising middle class that can afford it have escalated prices to $1,200 per pound some years. The hot market for The Root has inspired reality TV shows like National Geographic's Smoky Mountain Money and renewed fervor among diggers in Appalachia. The subsequent overharvest, along with rising deer populations and increased human development, have put the species at risk. For thousands of years, traditional Chinese medicine has used varieties of ginseng to treat poor digestion, nausea, laryngitis, and a host of energy-depleting disorders. Appalachian diggers have been gathering the plant for trade with China almost ever since. In 1837, 86,000 pounds of the root were extracted from a single North Carolina valley. Almost all of it went overseas. Western medicine is still investigating the plant's benefits. Some studies suggest that North American ginseng, Panax quinquefolius, can be used to treat diabetes and respiratory infections. But ginseng roots aren't just valued for their medicinal properties in China. They're appreciated as works of art among China's upper class. These roots are sometimes gifted as decorative symbols of health and well-being. In Hong Kong, at this very minute, roots extracted from North Carolina's soil are on display in glass cases. They still have dirt in their folds, compressed as it would have been under the fingernails of the digger who found the plants where it had grown undisturbed for half a century. The darker the dirt, the more desirable the specimen, the more knurled the root, the more valuable. These contortions prove that the plant faced hardship, yet year after year, it prevailed. Newman's radio hisses. The truck's tag is clear. The driver doesn't have any poaching infractions. He gives a little nod. That's what he figured, but he always follows up on instinct, because too often, it's right. Newman has had more ginseng cases than anyone else in his department. He isn't sure why. He only knows that the more time he spends getting to know the land in his charge, the better he gets at catching the people who harm it. They come with hiking poles, with walking sticks retrofitted for digging. It's paraphernalia that Newman is always dismayed to discover. "I'm not in this to be a cop," he says. "If people are going to dig ginseng, I just want them to dig responsibly and never on national parkland." To the south of Newman's post, Great Smoky Mountains National Park has had severe problems with poachers, some apprehended with 800 roots in their bags. In an effort to thwart the trend, rangers have stealthily marked some plants for tracking. Other plants have been injected with dye that ruins market value. "If you poach ginseng here, you're going to get jail time," Newman says, "and you're going to pay restitution for the loss of the resource and the time it takes to replant what's been extracted, if it isn't too late." When Newman has a ginseng case, he delivers the living evidence to biologist and natural resource manager Lillian McElrath as soon as he can. McElrath has worked in the park for more than 23 years. She grew up in Ashe County, where her father would send her out in the woods and call her in after the sun set. He used to say that when I went into the woods, I was like a bird set out of a cage, she says. Spending time in nature provides Elrath with a welcome counter to the stresses of daily life. In Chinese culture, ginseng is renowned for its ability to promote balance, energizing waning spirits, and calming fiery ones. McElrath can virtually feel her blood pressure drop in the presence of a yellow lady's slipper, which is why she's so well-versed in the allure of ginseng. The root used to inspire the same stress-relieving awe as wildflowers when she saw it, even though its teardrop-shaped leaves are relatively inconspicuous. But now it's too rare. "When I see ginseng now," she says, "my first reaction is, how am I going to protect it?" She feels a little differently when she comes across a transplanted evidence specimen that survived. "When I spot those," she says, "it's like witnessing a little bit of hope rising from the ground." The way Tony Hayes sees it, ginseng would be extinct if it weren't for responsible traditional diggers who respect the plant and guard it against unscrupulous hunters. He says as much to the man standing before him in the small cinder block building where Hayes has set up to buy ginseng. Hayes is what's known in the ginseng trade as a consolidator. Today, he's in Mitchell County, working directly with diggers, but he typically purchases large quantities of ginseng from other buyers. He started acquiring roots in 1973 for Low Fir and Herb Company. In 1982, became a representative of Boone's Wilcox Drug Company, which was founded in 1900. The now-defunct business was a ginseng house of national note. When it closed, Hayes and his wife started Ridge Runner Trading in Boone, which handles up to 10% of the United States wild ginseng market. The digger tells Hayes, "If the plant had seeds, I put them back into the hole I dug." Hayes nods in approval. "Next time you can spread them out a little. If you go ahead and bust them up, it'll help them germinate," he says. "A seed that's correctly planted by human hands is much more likely to take than one that falls to the ground on its own." And Hayes knows that educating diggers is crucial to ginseng's survival. Historically, people have been a great ally of the species, often tending to found woodland plots, propagating and protecting them in a way that blurs the definition of wild and cultivated. The digger is wearing blue coveralls and scuffed boots. He sets a flannel shirt on Hayes' desk and unfolds it to reveal three fistfuls of ginseng. Hayes examines each root, running his index finger along the bud sears on its rhizome or neck. Each year when the root sprouts, it creates a new knob. The plant can lie dormant, so it might be older than the number of scars it bears, but never younger. Legally, a root has to have at least four bud scars to be considered for trade. The digger mashes a baseball cap in his hand as Hayes goes over the details, sliding paperwork across the desk to be signed, confirmation that the digger acquired the ginseng legally. Hayes pulls a choice root off the top of the pile and admires it. With digging, there used to be a rule of thumb. If it wasn't as large as your thumb, you put it back into the ground, he says. The digger admits that he saw plenty that were too young to take. Hayes suggests that next time he should break off the tops of those plants to prevent anyone else from taking them. It's a protective technique that national park employees use on occasion. Before leaving, the digger tells Hayes that the ginseng came from land belonging to his uncle, who'd enjoyed taking his nephew into the woods. The shared quest for ginseng had given them the chance to reconnect. For Hayes, this was an ideal transaction, but they aren't all like that. Later in the day, he receives a young client who went digging without guidance. He's carrying his roots in plastic, Hayes' first indication that the teenager doesn't know what he's doing. Ginseng does better stored in a cardboard shoebox where it can breathe. Hayes hands two small plants back to the boy one at a time. "I can't accept this," he says. "You need to replant this." Soon the boy is holding a bouquet of roots the size of pipe cleaners. Hayes rolls a particularly slender root between his thumb and index finger and inhales. "Root beer. Sarsaparilla," he says, placing it in the boy's palm. "You can go make yourself some tea out of that." By the time Hayes has inspected every root, the first-time digger is left with just two viable ginseng specimens. He's paid $3. Undeterred, he says he'll be back the following week. As he walks out of the building, Hayes calls out, "Remember, a fisherman doesn't take every fish out of the water. You've got to throw back the small ones, so someday there'll be more." Watauga County Agricultural Extension Director Jim Hamilton loves ginseng. Around the office, his co-workers call him Jimseng. He studies it, teaches workshops on how to plant it, drinks daily smoothies sprinkled with it, and this morning he's on a mission to save some of it. Not long ago, he met a landowner who was set to clear-cut timber, and Hamilton secured permission to check the property for ginseng ahead of heavy machinery. He drives along a rutted road and parks near an embankment. Before entering the unfamiliar woods, he runs his hand along the edge of a note in his pocket. If a sheriff's deputy catches him digging, he'll need to have written permission on him. This land's been clear-cut before, he says, eyeing a young witch hazel tree. He scans the forest floor, looking for other complementary plants that tend to grow near Gensing, things like bloodroot and black cohosh, each with its own medicinal properties. Soon, it will all be gone. Historically, the forest was considered a medicine cabinet and pantry, he says. A lot of that knowledge is being lost. Suddenly, he spies a Gensing plant. Bingo, he says, again and again. After he's gathered several roots, he encounters a gigantic white oak. It takes a white oak a long time to get that big, he says, estimating that it's 200 or 300 years old, maybe left by a settler as the lone shade tree in a plowed field. The tree towering over him was likely alive before North Carolina was a state. It's amazing, isn't it? All this beauty, he says. Every set of woods is different, just like every root. The vast majority of ginseng exported from the United States isn't found by happenstance in the wild, but is cultivated in artificially shaded fields in Wisconsin, where crops are treated with fungicides and other substances. But some of it is grown in a third way, as wild simulated ginseng, which means that the roots are planted by human hands, but otherwise left to grow naturally. It's a sustainable industry that Hamilton is working to establish in the high country. Under his guidance, one of the largest wild stimulated ginseng farms in the country has been established in a local stand of pine trees. Hamilton needs to gather more plants for a rootlet distribution project he's working on in support of small-scale growers. It's September, mid-digging season, and ginseng leaves have already started to turn. At the farm, he braves a patch of poison ivy to lean his backpack against a tree trunk. Then he gets to work pushing back a blanket of pine needles. Ginseng is everywhere. In total, Travis Cornett of High County Ginseng has planted more than 20 acres on the farm. When Cornett, an electrical contractor who grew up hunting the plant, learned about wild simulated ginseng farming, he saw potential to support the species and his finances. At least 10 other farmers in Watauga County are growing the plant on a small scale. Most of them have ever-witnessing security cameras and, with a crop that takes years to mature, a great deal of patience. When Hamilton's backpack is full of permitted roots, he slings it over his shoulder. This morning, he was a ginseng hunter. This afternoon, he's a farmer. If you saw him coming out of the woods now, you might mistake him for a poacher. His stash of roots, a mix of wild and wild simulated, are identical to the untrained eye. In this region, there's potential to shift from timber extraction to medicinal plant production, he says, pausing to catch his breath on the steep climb back to his car. Already, local entrepreneurs are finding innovative ways to utilize the bounty of wild simulated ginseng. One grower has started making herbal tea out of discarded plant leaves. A brewery in Boone is experimenting with root-infused ginseng ale. It's too late for non-timber forest products to save the formidable white oak that Hamilton met earlier. But what if its owner had been introduced to ginseng cultivation years ago as an alternative to unsustainable forms of logging? Imperiled ginseng might, against all odds, ultimately help protect the forests it depends on. Hamilton breathes deeply, inhaling the scent of pine needles and the rich soil that's drying in the creases of his fingers. Digging for ginseng is like looking for hidden treasure, but it's also just a good excuse to get in the woods. Time slows down out here. I could stay all day, he says. You know the plant's name, Panax? The root of the word means everything, and that's what the Chinese say. Ginseng is good for everything, if you use it right. There's a small sidebar here. It says, a collector's life preserved. Throughout James Lowe's life, buying and selling roots and herbs for Lowe Fir and Herb Company. The Wilkes County business he co-owned with his brother was more than just a trade. It was a way of life. In 1978, Daddy bought 20,000 pounds of ginseng. He traveled all across the western part of the state to buy it, says Ann Absher, Lowe's daughter. The collector traveled the mountains in search of natural remedies, some of which are now on display in the Wilkes Heritage Museum. Lady's slipper and bloodroot are preserved alongside the largest ginseng root he ever purchased. Nearly 5 inches in width, the root stands out in Lowe's larger herb display in the back of the former courthouse. The family cherished the collection, but Absher admits you can't save it all. He donated it to the museum as a tribute to Lowe's life and work and an industry once vital to the local economy. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And if you have any comments on our program, please call the studios at 919-832-5138. We're going to flip back to the beginning of the magazine to finish up and read a few things here. In the section entitled, We Live Here, Downtown Mount Airy. In this music-loving community in the foothills of the Blue Ridge, visitors find much more than Mayberry. And we see the Earl Theater, and its marquee says, May at last, a portrait of the Abbott brothers, Friday the 17th, Saturday the 47, Sunday 4, I don't know what 1747 means, Monday the 7, I guess it's 1 and 7, 4 and 7, and Sunday 4 at 7, etc. And it says, take a tour of Main Street in a squad car like Deputy Barney Fife's and see all the iconic Mayberry landmarks. Along the way, you'll also spot the historic Earl Theater, open since 1938. Visitors come from all over the world looking for Mayberry, an quaint downtown flanked by the Sauratown and Blue Ridge Mountains. They find it. Well, sort of. While many come to Mount Airy to pay homage to hometown hero Andy Griffith, they soon find out that there's plenty to love in the real-life town, too. A former stagecoach stop along the Ararat River, Mount Airy found its fortune when mining took off at the nearby Granite Quarry in 1889. Later, local music legends like Tommy Jarrell and Benton Flippin helped bring attention to a beloved regional sound, and the spot became a bluegrass and old-time music hotspot. Today, one of the nation's longest-running radio shows still plays old-time and bluegrass music from the historic Earl Theater. In October, the Autumn Leaves Festival brings thousands of visitors to Main Street to celebrate the area's rich music traditions, plus crafts, art, and delicious food. People often come searching for a warm, familiar time that feels lost and long ago. But in Mount Airy, they find that it just isn't so lost after all. And here's a bird's eye view of Main Street. They say you can get that by climbing the clock tower. And it's all kinds of tents set up along either side of the road. And it's all lit up and people are wandering around. It's almost like a state fair or a circus or something like that. On the next page, it says that Mount Airy's Autumn Leaves Festival, held this October from the 12th to the 14th, so it's gone by. Attendees line up for treats like freshly made donuts and caramel apples coated in peanuts. But no food is more beloved than the collard green sandwich at Sandy Level Community Council Tent. Okay. Made with collards and fatback between two slices of cornbread, the sandwich has been a staple at Autumn Leaves for almost as long as local musician Michael Fox, who started a jam session that's been playing for the event for 35 years. And then on the next page, in the midst of some pictures, it says, founded by Ben Wright in 2002, Old North State Winery on Main Street produces a variety of wines, including an award-winning sweet white muscadine. Two blocks away is one of the town's best-kept secrets, the Blue House Grounds, a quiet park where locals picnic and do yoga on the lawn. A little sidebar, the Granite City, built in 1923, the former Bank of Mount Airy, like many buildings in town, is faced with solid granite. This is, after all, Granite City. Just east of downtown is the largest open-faced granite quarry in the world, known by locals as The Rock. It's been mined for centuries, making Mount Airy famous long before Mayberry. The granite has been used in projects like the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., the Wright Brothers National Memorial, and a temple in Bangkok. And, of course, right in its own hometown. The only Mount Airy business ever mentioned during the 8-year run of the Andy Griffith Show, Snappy Lunch, rose to fame with the help of owner Charles Dowell and his famous pork chop sandwich. Charles died in 2012 at the age of 84, and his son-in-law, Seth Dowell Young, now mans the grill. But people still come from near and far for taste. And while Snappy's pork chop sandwiches are storied, the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuits are worth a try, too. Next door, Floyd's City Barber Shop also attracts its fair share of fans. Owner Russell Hyatt was the inspiration for the character of Floyd Lawson on The Andy Griffith Show. And he cut hair for almost 70 years until he died in 2016 at the age of 92. Today, a wall of fame showcases memorabilia and photos of famous visitors like Oprah Winfrey, and the spirit of the real Floyd lives on. That's the end of the article. There's a picture of the sun there, shot from the back, frying up those pork chops on the grill, and the Snappy Lunch sign with Coca-Cola emblazoned on it, and then there's a sandwich, and then there's a lady cutting a man's hair, and a sign that says haircuts 25 to 50 cents, and it looks like the Andy Griffith crew. It's kind of a pen, a pencil, or a charcoal type poster that's on the wall with a lot of other photographs, some of which are autographed, but I can't read who that might be. It looks like it might be Ronnie Millsap, but I'm not really sure. On the next page, it says, a warm Asheville welcome. When you vacation in Asheville, we hope you'll visit us at Publix. See for yourself why we're such a beloved supermarket. We'll help you with all your vacation needs, from food and drinks to snacks and supplies. See you soon. They're on Hendersonville Road and Weaver Boulevard. Well, Weaver Boulevard's actually in Weaverville. Hendersonville Road is in Asheville. That's Public Supermarkets. And on page away is an ad from Alamance County, which is Burlington, Mebane, Elon, Graham, and Saxapaw. Discover everything our area offers at visitalamance.com or call 800-637-3804. And that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments? Questions? Call the studios. 919-832-5138. So long until next time.